Let us in. Mary said, enlarge your hearts. Enlarge yourselves. Make room for us. Bring us in among you. I don't think he says not, he isn't saying this like in a sense, because some people would say, well, we're ready to receive you. What do you mean? Are you saying we're trying to shut you out? And that's what he means in verse 3. I'm not saying this to condemn you. It's rhetorical. Let us in. We have wronged no man, defrauded no man. We have corrupted no man. He's not saying that they're, you know, they might think, well, we didn't say you did. Why are you saying this? Are you saying that we are saying that you corrupted someone? No, no, no. You're in my heart to live and die with you, he's saying. That's how much he loved the brethren at Corinth. And not for condemnation. What he's saying is, great is my boldness of speech toward you. Great is my glorying of you. I'm filled with comfort. I'm exceedingly joyful in all our tribulation. I wonder if it wasn't sort of a little bit of both. Because when he says in verse 2, receive us, we have wronged no man, you know, he is sort of being slightly defensive. In the sense that he's saying, we have, maybe he is suggesting that others have. Others may have defrauded you. Others have corrupted. And others have wronged. But we haven't. And he's saying, I'm not saying this to condemn you. Maybe that's what he means. That we are loyal to you. We are faithful to you. And he speaks boldly towards them. He feels very confident to be outspoken. He doesn't feel like he has to be careful. It's funny he says that. I usually just do that. I don't feel like I have to say, I feel very confident in saying this to you, but maybe maybe because it's written, it's harder to convey that feeling in writing. So he wants you to know, I'm saying this with boldness. I'm saying this because the word boldness, I think we would think of it differently than they would. Boldness of speech, you know, it means like in an outspoken manner. You know, great is my boasting of you. He was very pleased with them. You know, they were going through all kinds of trouble, and the news of them and the hearing of the things that were going on in Corinth, obviously, this is in response to what they had been doing. This is his response. And I guess the lesson I would take from this, because this is, to me, it is important not merely to understand what is being said, but to understand what does it mean. It's an example of how to receive and build up others who have been instructed. Meaning, in the first letter there was some very bold correction and sharp, you know, reprimand on the things that have been done. I mean, he said there were sins going on there that it would be a shame to speak of even among the heathen. And in Christians, it was absolutely terrible. Because we're supposed to be perfecting holiness, and there was a man there who was having an affair with his father's wife, his stepmother. And that's the thing, people, they'll do so many things. I've met so many people, I've known people in my life, who, you know, they go to church, right, and they meet someone, and they start having intimate relations together, and they think, isn't it wonderful how God brought us together? Right? We met in church. You know, and we're not going to get married yet, maybe. We want to keep the door open to turn it into fornication. You know? I mean, the thing is, if they were just married, then they would have no sin. But because they refuse. They're stiff-necked. It's fornication. And they think, oh, how isn't God wonderful to us? You know, and so, you know, they go together to hear Paul, and they start being convicted. But they still have got this vile sin going on. And you know what? It's understandable, because man is a creature of wicked habits. But it needs to be dealt with as far as the church can't have that continuing. They need to lay it aside. Things have to stop, you know? Especially the more grievous things. Things that are scandalous. You can't have scandal brought into the church. It's one thing like, oh, I don't know. Some things these days aren't scandalous. They probably should be. But 1 Corinthians was about the scandals going on there. And so this letter is of a much different tone. So that's why Paul is very, you know, they had obeyed, and he was very pleased with them. He keeps talking about how he is bold towards them. He feels this great boasting about them, and he's very comforted in them. He was very happy about all the things that had gone on there, because he saw that they had heard him. They had obeyed what his advice was, and that they were prospering in the gospel. They were laying aside filthiness of the flesh, you know, laying hold on the promises of God, taking that all very seriously. And if I could see a large group of people doing that, it would make me joyful as well, and it has. In the midst of trouble, it's a great comfort to know brethren are out there following the doctrine of truth as you know it, you know. So when they went to Macedonia, their flesh had no rest. They were in trouble on every side. Without the church, there was fighting. Inside, there was fears. Or without, you know, inside, outside, there's fights. Inside, fear. Well, fear not. So I say, it's natural to feel afraid. But it is not appropriate for a son of God or a believer in Jesus Christ to let themselves be overtaken by fear and to be completely swallowed up in it to where their faith, you know, they don't hang on to their faith. And so I guess as I'm saying that, people are like, well, how do I know the difference? Sometimes, depending on what it is, it's hard to tell the difference. I mean, if it's over little mundane things, too much fear is too much. You know, I can't pay my bills. I'm afraid.